Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is TS Radio. TS Radio. And we are broadcasting live. Extra effort to get here. Welcome to the show, everybody. And bam, we're back. I know
there are some
people out there that thought they had blown me offline, but you see, I'm still here. Anyway, tonight's show is Whistleblowers, and it's presented in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblowers Annual Summit in Washington, D.C. And we got a really special guest tonight. He's been with us a couple times before. He's a whistleblower. And I want to read just a little bit of what we were able to put out on the promo about him. When he was on in the past, it was as a result of being the named plaintiff in a class action lawsuit. He faced domestic terrorist-style reprisal attacks, which eventually cost him his distinguished law enforcement career. After 24 and a half years of service, an impeccable record, and numerous awards, certificates of excellence, letters of recognition, Mr. Grogan faced the horrific reprisal by the Department of Justice, United States Marshal Service Office of General Counsel Joe Lazar, supported by legal representatives from the DOJ. And he is currently running for sheriff of Prince George's County out in Maryland. And I'm just thrilled to death to have him back on the show tonight. So everybody help me welcome Dave Grogan. Dave, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I'm glad. I'm happy to be back on the show.
Yeah, you're an excellent guest for one thing. You know, as I was reading through all of what you've done over your career, to see you run for sheriff, the people out there in Maryland are lucky that they have someone of your caliber that's willing to take that office. We've seen this militarization of the police across the country. People now are more afraid of law enforcement than they are of criminals. And
absolutely.
I mean, it shouldn't be that way. And I remember a time, David, when, you know, they were part of our community. You depended on these people. You knew who they were. You could talk to them. They talked to you. It isn't that way anymore. And people are afraid of them. And when I was over on your website, which is www.davegrogan.com, I noticed you believe in community policing and basically working with the young people in the community, and I think is key to leveling things out and getting community cooperation. And tell us what you intend to do if you are elected sheriff.
Yes, well, like you mentioned, I am a staunch advocate for community policing. I grew up, I'm obviously not that old, but I grew up with Officer Friend. And I remember when I first actually started my law enforcement career, we operated within community policing, you know, realm. And
yes.
I was actually present when I saw the transitioning coming. It was probably about 8 to 10 years before I retired that I saw it coming. I saw a different generation coming. I saw a broken promotional system. Because the reason why we've got here, let me be very clear, is because of a broken promotional system. When you, when you have people at the people at the top set the tone for a law enforcement agency or the department. They set the tone. So if the person at the top is bad, you're going to have a bad police department or a bad law enforcement agency. And what happened is, like I said, I watched the transition. I watched a promotional system that has very little, if nothing, to do with qualification, skills, knowledge, and/or ability. It has nothing to do with it. So then now these people have made their way to the top, and so now they bring in their other gung-ho, non-qualified people with questionable character. Now they're in charge. And I watch it. I watched it probably 10 years or so before I started retiring. I was so glad to get out of there. I did 25 years and ran out of there as soon as I could because I just couldn't – I could no longer stand the fact that people no longer respect law enforcement. They know I was almost embarrassed. I was almost embarrassed. It was a time where I was proud to say I was a law enforcement officer. Now I'm almost embarrassed. So one of the things, there's a couple of things that I'm going to do. One, it's not going to be difficult to restore the respect of the community. It's not going to be difficult at all because it starts with community policing and it starts with our kids. Our kids need to see positive role models. They need to meet. They need to know who the sheriff is. Any functional community, the people know who the sheriff is because they're elected the person. They know exactly who it is. So if we have no idea who the sheriff is, that in itself is a problem. So I'm going to make sure that every person in Prince George's County, they will know. Their kids already know. I've been in our schools for over 30-something years, and trust me, our kids already know the name Dave Logan because I've been there. I didn't just start going campaigning. I've been doing it over 30 years. So just expanding, continuing that on a different level and expanding programs. There's so many programs for kids that they're unaware of. I came through a program. I came to a co-op cooperative education program in college. I also, as I was a cooperative education student while I was a student at Bowie State. And I also worked for the Secret Service. So I worked for the Department of Justice, U.S. Marshals as a co-op student, and I worked for the Secret Service as a stay-in-school student. And back then, even then, I was recruiting. And I've been recruiting 29 years later. So it's just, getting back to the community, expanding these programs is what I intend to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, you talk about working with these kids. My youngest granddaughter just graduated high school this last June, and two things happened during her senior year that it's just upset me terribly. They had these mock lockdown drills and lined those kids up in the hallway and brought the drug sniffing dogs in, and it scared them to death. And of course I went ballistic, and these kids are scared to death. It's sitting around here talking with kids, which I had a house full all the time, and they weren't watching. They'd migrate in here to where I was, and they'd start talking. People think these kids aren't aware of anything going on. They are, and they also are very aware that what they're hearing isn't jiving with what they're seeing and experiencing. And so when I said to them, what would you do if, you saw a crime being committed or you thought you were in trouble, who would you call? You said, would you call the police? And in unison, no, they'll kill you. When these kids have this attitude of the police, the sheriff, you can't call them because those are the people most likely to hurt you. We've got a problem.
We have got a major problem, and that's across the country wide. It's a trend across the country. It's a very sad trend, sad trend, and that's a shame. That is absolutely – I think if you poll most kids from around the country, they all probably feel the same way.
Yeah.
They feel the same way. That's
And David, I come from a generation where – and I hate to even bring this up because it really dates me, but I can remember in elementary school getting something called the Weekly Reader. And one of them that stood out in my mind for me, because I always loved to read and I loved the Weekly Reader, was a picture on the front of one, and it showed a policeman, and this is back when they wore the double-breasted blazer with the brass buttons and, the cap, and standing with his arm around a child, and it's, and every kid you knew wanted to be a policeman or a fireman. Everyone. All going to be policemen or firemen. Now, if you say, have you thought about law enforcement? No, I can't be part of that. And it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be part of that.
It shouldn't.
And I noticed, too, on your website, you go out and you actually talk to these kids. You actually get out in the community so that they do know you. Yeah.
I do. And I've done it for over 30-something years. Sometimes when people are campaigning, they begin to start doing things when they're running for office. and they started coming up with programs, and then all of a sudden everybody's the hot button topic now was a mentor. Everybody's a mentor all of a sudden.
Yeah.
When they're running for office. But I've been in our schools for over 30 years. I've always, since I was a student, I've been going to schools and recruiting. I've been recruiting since the first day I got recruited. And I know these kids, when you talk to them, trust me, by the time I leave the classroom, you get back to the basics with the kids, and everyone want to be a law enforcement officer by the time.
Well, it used to be such an honorable position to hold in the community. You know, you were respected. You just were. You were the idol. You know, you were the hero that everybody wanted to be. And when I listen to these kids talk, the hero never comes up.
No,
it's fear. It's loathing. They're scared to death. They even talk about driving down the road because now, like up here in Minnesota, we got these scanned license plates, and you know, you can't even drive down the road without being tracked. I had an encounter with a deputy sheriff here about 3 years ago, and I was looking down here. I'm a gardening fool, and my yard looks like the botanical center. But I was down looking at plants, and this man was standing, kind of staring at me. And I thought, dang, I must be a diva. And now we know that ain't true. But anyway, I finally walked over to him and I said, is there something I can help you with? And he goes, no. And he said, I was just watching. And I said, and he's got on the dark glasses and everything. And I said, can I ask you a question? And he said, yeah. I said, how come there isn't a law enforcement vehicle left in this country, including that one you drove up in, that says to protect and serve on it anymore?
Absolutely. Yes.
Why doesn't it say
that?
That's
a good point.
And he said,
good observation.
Because our mandate has changed. And they came up under Homeland Security. All of the police were brought up under Homeland Security in 2003. And Homeland Security itself should not exist. It's unconstitutional, but that's my opinion. Anyway,
okay.
But the only person they cannot bring up under Homeland Security is the sheriff because he's elected. And
right.
So there's been this background thing going on now for all these years of how to disempower that sheriff's office. And
yes.
But I said to him, how come it no longer? He said, well, our mandate has changed. And I said, from what to what? He said, well, from law enforcement and keeping the peace. He said, we're no longer here to protect the public. We are here to protect the government from you.
Whoa.
I said, is that right?
Wow.
And
wow.
I said, well, was my gardening upsetting you? I mean, can I ask, you know, digging in my yard? what did I do? And but he said, national security is everything. And the one thing I've learned about national security, David, is that it has nothing to do with all of us out here in no man's land. National security is about protecting the government.
Right.
It's not about
right.
protecting us. So when
absolutely.
I see law enforcement brought up, and I want to ask you your opinion on this militarization of police.
Oh, my goodness, I can't stand it. I couldn't stand it 20 years ago when I started, about 15. I started asking questions when I was probably 10 to 15 years out from retirement, and we started purchasing AR-15s. Now, AR-15 is a war gun. That's a gun for the Marines. I'm a United States Marine. That is a war gun for the Marine Corps or Army Rangers or something, or Navy SEALs or something. What in the world do we need these things for? There's nothing that we could be doing that will require a war gun. So now we're spending all of this money, and that was the beginning of it, and I couldn't stand it. I mean, so now the police come out, and that's the beginning of scaring people.
Yes.
And that's the beginning where you come out and you look like everybody looks like they're a SWAT team. I also saw it, too, and when I spent 15 years with the Witness Protection Program, and I came back to courts, probably, I think, in 2007. So when I came back, you know, now we have our deputy marshals in court with combat gear on. So that was unheard of because the marshals were always known to be the sharpest dressed guys and girls in suits. the nicest suits. They dress sharp. They look professional. Now we're in court in combat gear, and I couldn't understand.
Right.
We're in combat gear, and the prisoners are chained up like slaves, going to court. So I said,
yes.
Wait a minute, what is going on here? I mean, I'm not that old, but if you knew how to manage prisoners, we did it in suits because
yes.
we knew how to manage them. And then they didn't have chains on. We didn't chain up juveniles and have them. And they're not convicted of crimes yet. They're just being charged. So
right.
And there were some judges that would not allow it. There are some judges in D.C. that will not allow marshals to come disrespect their courts and come in war gear. They would
right.
have to have a suit on, and they would not allow them to bring prisoners out chained up like they're going into slavery or something. There were some judges, and the marshals honored that, those judges
yes.
that they wouldn't allow it. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the other thing is, too, and this all coincided, and if you think I'm wrong, please say so, but this all coincided also with John Ashcroft coming out with his sentencing guidelines, which he had no
yes.
authority to do. But it
right.
was the forerunner to the privatized prisons, which they're selling
yes.
prisoner bonds on. And so
yes.
when you bring someone into a courtroom, now, if I'm wrong, you tell me, and you bring them in chains, you've already decided they're guilty, and you've already sold that bond and guaranteed
right.
they're going to be in that jail X number of days. And when
right.
David, when I got into this and really dug into it and found out that, like, these transport companies, okay,
mm-hmm.
that supposedly transport prisoners. Now, from the day they contract to pick that prisoner up, it might be a year till they actually do. And
right.
but they get paid for every day as if they already did. Then once they pick
mm-hmm.
them up, they can travel state to state to state with them, and they get paid
mm-hmm.
for all of that. And
mm-hmm.
what I'm looking at is a big money mill here made off of trafficking people. And
yes.
And do you think I'm correct in that observation?
Yes, you're absolutely correct. That's a great observation. It is a money
okay.
mill. It is a money
yeah.
mill. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. Let's and I'm just going on the fact that I believe you're going to get elected. And once you become sheriff, what are you going to do? What are you going to change?
Well, the first thing I will do is I'll spend some time assessing what's going on and what's not going on. I'm not a big
mm-hmm.
proponent of fixing things that are not broken.
Right.
But I think one of the differences with me is that I will be a lot more actively involved in the sheriff's office as opposed to a political figure. So I'm going to want to know who's getting hired and why are they getting hired. What are
mm-hmm.
our qualifications? Who's getting promoted? Why are they getting promoted? What are the standards for getting promoted? I'm going to be assessing all of those things, and I'm a stickler for professionalism. So I do know
right.
that there are some problems out there with the service because, like the Marshal Service, the Marshal Service is a service oriented agency, and service
right.
means offering a service to the people. And the
right.
Sheriff's Department is similar. It's primarily service oriented. So when you're dealing with evictions and different things like that, you're basically a service to the court. So I want
right.
to make sure that we're operating at a much, much higher level and that we're very professional. When landlords own property and they need evictions or any type of service from the sheriff's department, that one thing that will be totally different that people will probably recognize off the back, the level of professionalism. It's not going to be
excellent.
It's going to operate like a Fortune 500 company because we're only going to hire people that are operating at the level of my expectations.
Okay. David, we've got a caller on here. Hold on a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Area code 804. Did you have a question or comment for David?
Both. I want to
okay.
congratulate him. He sounds like the kind of law enforcement we need countrywide. And I've had quite a bizarre life. I'm also a former whistleblower. I'd like to direct you to a Facebook page. I don't myself do anything inbound or outbound on the internet, but there is a website referenced on there I think you'll find quite revealing.
Okay.
If you just put my name, it's Hugh, H-U-G-H. The last
uh-huh.
name, Charlson, is spelled T like Tom, R-A-U-L S-E-N like Nancy, Facebook profiles, and the picture of me with my finger on a big marble ball or globe is the one to click on.
Okay.
And you'll see a website on there, which is rootingoutcorruption.weebly.com.
Okay.
As far as the police in general, I support them. They are professionally trained, and people have to give them the respect. They are public servants, but they're not doormats. So if you listen to them and they do what you tell they tell you to do, you'll be okay. Even if it's a bad or corrupt police officer, don't get engaged, take it up in the court system. And even though the court systems are corrupt too, with transparency coming more and more, all this is going to be ferreted out. My life was saved by the police in New York. I was set up by a corrupt police sergeant who's now dead. That's karma. I didn't ask for that to happen, but you'll see a lot of information, and I hope that I'll be able to help you work with other whistleblowers too, because if it's valid information that needs to come forth to clean up the corruption, that's what has to be done to unite this country and get it back on track and stop the global elites that are trying to cause chaos and break everything down.
I agree.
Yes.
I agree with you, Hu. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate your comments. David, this is something else. You know, we talk about the militarization of police. You talked about them having these AR-15s. And I have watched over the last 5 years in particular as the militarization has been ramped up. Now, what I read about it was that supposedly the military contractors overproduced. So this to me is not our problem. That's their problem. But so what they did was the Department of Defense buys all this crap from them, tanks, grenade launchers, God knows what else, and they give it to these. Well, they do. And they give it to these police departments, like, you know, out here in Minnesota, we need a big old rolling tank. You know we do. And we got corn out here that's liable to go crazy at any moment, you know. And they given it out to them, and I couldn't understand why the sudden rise in the SWAT team raids that were going on. Okay, I couldn't – this was just – well, then I find out that part of this – is their contract when they get this discounted military gear is that they have to use it at least twice in the first year, which accounted for this rise in, you know, we got the neighbors are squabbling and seven vans of SWAT show up, a tank, you know, a military helicopter circling overhead, and it's because their barbecue got out of control. What's wrong with this picture? You know, you know what I'm saying? But people are sick to the, they're scared, but they're also getting fed up with it. And the corruption that goes on. You spoke about people's qualifications. The other thing I found in all of the stuff I dig around in is that they are looking for people where it used to be they only selected people that psychologically were suited for that work. That, you know, had a stable character, that, you know, had a good profile psychologically, had a good profile and would be a proper person for that position. Those people are discounted. Now they're looking for people that show aggressive tendencies, that show.
Yes.
And what happens, David, what happens to people when they put on these goofy looking uniforms that look like they came out of Star Wars with the sunglasses and, you know, the face like Arnold Schwarzenegger out of one of his movies and, you know, I'll be back. You know, what happens to these people? I mean, you saw the Stanford experiment, what happened, you know, and when they did this, they took the students and split them and in 2 weeks had to stop it because the ones that were the guards went insane and actually started physically abusing the other students who were supposed to be the prisoners. What happens in these people's heads? I don't understand.
Well, think about it. I've always said, you know, I don't know that people realize what happens to a person in general when you give them a badge and a gun. When you give the wrong person a badge and a gun. I'm a proponent. I think everyone should have some type of psychological evaluation before you hand over a badge and a gun, because if it's in the wrong hands, we'll see what we're seeing a lot. We'll see a lot more of what we're seeing today.
Yeah.
And I think it starts at the beginning. It starts with the recruiting. I totally agree with you. It's a recruiting issue, because again, if the person at the top is bad, you can best believe it's going to trickle down, because that person is going to bring in a bad, unqualified person, and it's going to trickle down, and you're going to have the type of law enforcement that we see today. It has to be somebody at the top that says, wait a minute, you know, we have to have certain standards. We shouldn't be afraid. If you want a badge and a gun, you shouldn't be afraid to go through the proper background checks, security clearances, evaluations, and make sure you're equipped. We can't just give badges and guns to people just because they show an interest in it.
Yeah, I agree. But there's something psychological, and I realize that in watching that Stanford experiment thing, that happens to that person psychologically. I understand about the black impenetrable sunglasses, because it dehumanizes that person. When you cannot see a person's eyes, and you know they're staring dead at you, but you can't see their eyes, there is a disconnect that happens there. Fear is the first thing that comes up.
Yes.
And, you know, and I should not be afraid of law enforcement. I brought up on another show with another person, in fact, it was another federal marshal that had left the service, about the fact that when I moved in this house 19 years ago, the deputy sheriff pulled up out here in front, and I was moving in, and he said, you're new to the neighborhood. I said, I am. And he said, was asking me who I was, and everything. He was nice. He got out of the car, shook my hand, and everything. Man was very nice. And he said, are you going to be living here alone? And at the time I was, and I said, yes. And he said, look, if you have any problems, if anything concerns you, he said, you know, if for any reason you become concerned, you call us. We'll be right here. I said, okay. And I said, thank you for stopping. And I would see him occasionally, and he'd wave. And he used to walk around town here. He'd talk to people and everything else. Now they go by, they do everything, David, but give you the finger. I mean, and it just, you know what I'm saying? And see them coming down the road. I have to tell you, here, about a year and a half ago, I was going out to where my granddaughter was working to pick her up from work at 10:30 at night. And I had been painting my dining room. I look so good. And I'm busting along about 10:30 at night out here on these back roads. And everything out here is country. And I had to make a right turn off of one highway onto another. I didn't get, I would bet, an eighth of a mile from the stop sign. And a sheriff's car passed me going the other direction. There's nobody out there but me. And I saw the lights come on. I thought, uh-oh, what did I do? Anyway, he pulls me over. I stopped. I rolled my window down about 4 inches. He said, roll the window down. I said, it is down. He said, roll it all the way down. I said, it's down far enough. I can hear you. And he said, I clocked you at 68 miles an hour. In my car? I don't think so. Not even with a good tailwind. And I said, you did what? He said, I clocked you at 68 miles an hour. I said, I'd be lucky if this car did 68 miles an hour. And so he said, give me your driver's license, blah, blah, blah. So I get all this stuff out, and I hand it to him. And he wants to know what I'm doing. I said, I'm going out to pick up my granddaughter from her job. He goes back to his car. He comes back, throws my stuff in the window. He goes, well, you're just squeaky clean, aren't you? I said, I am. And he goes, just a minute, walks to the back of my car, walks back up, and starts screaming, have you been drinking?
Oh, my.
And I said, no. But I said, I was about to ask you the same question. I said, I can smell alcohol. I said, are you drinking on the job? And, well, now that you have to understand, David, I'm scared to death. I am scared. I'm an old lady, right? And I am scared to freaking death. But I just got a thing I have to tell you from a friend of mine. My birthday's coming up October. That said, I'm an October girl. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I got a fire in my soul and a mouth I cannot control. Thank you for understanding. And that's me. But anyway, you know, I'm sitting there about to wet myself in my own car. And he just looked at me and goes, get out of here. I went, okay. And I took off. I'm just shaking like Mrs. Gumby woman, right? But I wasn't doing anything. And here I am on an abandoned road. Now, I should not have been afraid. Do you understand what I'm saying? And I was. Well. From the minute those lights came on, I was. I was afraid.
Right. Yeah.
And, yeah. You know, I'm not all that big. And I know people, when I went to the summit, it said, God, I thought you'd be 6 or 7 feet tall, and you're just the hobbit. Shut up. Well, anyway, but I should not be afraid. And no, I was.
Should.
I was terrified. And but there again, that thing about it, and a mouth I cannot control. See, my mouth just overloads my butt all the time. And so... But this is what happens to people, and you see the sheriff right around town here, and you see people go in their houses, you know, they don't come back out until they're gone. And you see them parked out in the cornfield, and see, there's no reason for this. There's no reason for this. And
it shouldn't
so
be that way.
No, to see someone come up for an office like this, for someone like you, where you... Honestly, you've got integrity, you've got character, you know, you've got credibility, you've got credentials.
Yeah.
I hope those people have enough sense to elect you. I truly do.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope
it
so.
Just, let me
I
ask you.
I spent a lot
this.
Of time. Uh-huh.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I spent a lot of time working to make sure that people even know that I exist, because it's tough. It's tough. When you're not a part of a political machine, it's very tough, and you gotta the grassroots aspect of it is tough. But I'm a Marine, so I'll work 24/7 to make sure that when they go to the polls, they won't have to question who is Dave Grogan.
Yeah, there you go, there you go. It just I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me why. Why they are doing this. And one of my grandkids' friends that was here for a while had been training for West Point, actually got appointed to West Point, and then stopped it. He dropped out. He said it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. And every summer, Dave, he went to all these camps and training and everything from the time he was about 13, 14 till he graduated high school. And so he was here visiting from Maryland. And I said, what do you do when you go for training? He said, what we're doing right now, he said, is training. And this is what he said, David, for when they declare martial law. And I said,
whoa.
Do you realize what you just said to me? And he said, yes, ma'am. And he sat there and he looked at me, and the kids all call me Nanny. He said, Nanny, I don't know if I can do this. And I said, well, maybe you're misunderstanding what they're... He said, no, ma'am. He said, they're talking about when they declare martial law. And he said, they said, we're talking about... This is why, he's in one of the classes I went to, this is why military equipment is being handed out to all law enforcement across the country. And he said they are the standing national police now that Obama talked about. And I thought, oh, God. And I've talked to other people, David, and this frightens me. And I know it played a part in him rejecting West Point. He just couldn't do it. And he said, and not that he didn't have the ability and the intelligence.
Right.
He did. And he had worked for this for years. But he said, I can't be a part of that. Now, if you get elected sheriff, or I'd rather say when you get elected sheriff, if you find in your department that you have officers who may be acting out of line or, let's just say, bullying or otherwise antagonizing people, what would you do about that?
Well, one of the things I've said always, I've supervised law enforcement or managed law enforcement officers 23 out of my 25 years, and that's why I know that the person at the head sets the tone. And folks knew who worked for me. I had their back 110%. However, I had zero tolerance for human and or civil rights violations. I had zero tolerance for human and civil rights violations. So I would first of all, any allegation that arises, I would look into it. I wouldn't ignore it. I would give my guys, like I would always tell my guys and girls that, you know, I will always give them the benefit of the doubt. However, these things will be looked into, and if I find any wrongdoing, civil rights, human rights violations, you know, the appropriate action will be taken quickly.
Right.
And when you set that tone, it's no different than I used to run the largest natural drug free bodybuilding show, one of them in the country. And
well,
people knew how serious I was about drug free, so they knew they wouldn't come in my show taking drugs.
Right.
Because they knew if they got caught that they were going to get exposed. So again, it's sort of the same concept. The person at the top sets the tone, and when the people fall in line, they fall in line based on what's going on at the top. And I'm going to set the right tone from the beginning.
Good for you. Good for you. I was happy to see that you were pursuing this. Marcel actually had given me a heads up that you were running for the sheriff's office. And I know a lot of people out in that area, so I've been sending out emails and telling people, you need to get in behind this, man. And I would like to see a return to where, like I say, they're the heroes of our communities again. This idea that our kids are terrified of, hell, adults are. I am.
Yes, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
That shouldn't be that. We're paying these people salary.
We're paying
their
salary.
Saying,
sometimes people forget it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like I can demote them or fire them. They won't let me. But I got to keep paying this person. And I think it's unfortunate it has devolved to this level. And what I'm always afraid of is that the fear in the community is going to rise to such a level that there is going to be a confrontation.
Right.
And I honestly believe this also, that there has been a concerted effort at least for the last 6 years to get a race war going. And Ferguson was supposed to set that off. The only thing that saved that from being a wholesale slaughter was when the people who actually were from Ferguson, not the ones that the FBI bust in to loot and riot and raise hell and get the thing going, not the paid actors, but the people when the Star Wars group showed up banging their batons on their shields, and you knew what was coming. You knew what was coming. And the video I saw brought me to tears. Here were the people of Ferguson, the actual residents, locked arms and made a line, put their back to the police so you couldn't say we were confrontational and we were assaulting you. You scared us, so we shot you in the head. When they locked arms and you could see, I noticed one lady was just shaking like a leaf, and they were holding the line to stop them, even though these people had been sent in to get this riot going, to stop them from opening fire. But that was supposed to be the catalyst.
That was supposed to
be the catalyst. And had it not been for the people of that community forming that line and stopping the police, and you could see the looks on their face behind them, you know, even behind their shields and all their gear, and if they looked like they were going to get beamed up at any moment. And it was like, what do we do now, you know? And we can't shoot anybody, you know.
Exactly.
But that was supposed to be the catalyst, this thing that just happened out in Charlotte. that police officer came out and said they were told to stand down and let these groups go at it, make sure they got together, and then stand down and not do it. And I'm scared for that man's life. I truly am. They were, you know, they are trying. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he's probably got a big contract out on him, too. And
I'm sure.
You know, but this kind of thing of causing this racial divide, they can't get us to go against each other any other way. So we'll revive this old war and, you know, we'll do what we can. I have another question.
Mm-hmm.
And you initially had written, you sent me a copy of the email that actually got you into whistleblowing without realizing it, when you talked about the mental capability of people, you know, that you were working with and their problems. And I read that email that you sent. It was very professional. There was no finger pointing. There was no emotional ranting or, you know, so-and-so's nuts and you need to get rid of it. It wasn't any of that. Your indication that you wanted to cooperate and help and work with and, you know, address these issues that were happening. How did that turn into being what it was, what it ended up being?
Well, what I didn't – well, one, there was no action taken on that email and there was no response at all. And I sensed that that email was written back in 2007, and essentially what it did was it was me asking a department head, what can I do to help? I've been an eyewitness to assault. We've got homicide, suicide, on and on. This is back in 2007. What are we going to do? What can I do? And I even volunteered. I would head up this committee because we've got a problem.
Mm-hmm.
No response to that. But I noticed that from that point on, that is sort of the beginning when things started heating up against me. Because I later realized that that's not something that law enforcement wants to deal with.
Right.
It's not something that we want to keep that a secret. We don't want people knowing that the real problems that we have, because there are a lot of problems behind the blue wall of silence, so-called.
Uh-huh.
And that's a major problem. And I was not a young rookie at that point, but I was still very young in my career when I thought I was offering them some means of help. And I outlined specifically, you know, the particular cases, the suicides, the homicides, the assaults, everything. And I said, wait a minute, how much longer are we going to go with this before somebody says, wait a minute, enough is enough? And God forbid, since that time, I mean, the numbers have just increased tenfold probably. And that was back in 2007. So I've always had a passion. I just want to help. You know, and I have a passion for mental health awareness. I can always tell when people are having problems. And law enforcement people need to be checked. They're regular people like everyone else. You know, they have deaths in the family, they have divorces, they have life challenges, depression, all these different things. But if we don't have anything in place to address it, you're going to end up where we are today. We're in bad shape. We're in bad shape as law enforcement. We got to do better.
Yeah. Well, and I think what aggravates people too, David, is I'm going to go to that Philando Castile case up here in Minneapolis. The video on that, honest God, I almost screamed. The one his girlfriend took from within the car was bad enough, but when you saw the one taken from the cruiser, where that officer just opened fire into that car with that baby in that car, point blank, shooting that man, and here he's well known in his community, he has not done nothing wrong. He informed them immediately that he had a concealed carry permit, and he did have a weapon, and then this officer is screaming, I want to see your ID, I want to see, and he goes to get in his pocket, and that officer opened fire and shot that man, I don't know how many times, point blank, and got acquitted. Got acquitted. Yeah. I'm sorry, that was cold-blooded murder. That was cold-blooded murder.
One thing you said earlier I want to go back to, because it ties into that comment there, is that law enforcement people, when we go through training, we're trained to this camaraderie, this whole thing. But I don't think the average law enforcement person realizes that when they get in trouble, they're protected, and they're protected because they're protecting the government. They're not protecting an individual.
Right.
And a lot of times people think it's race, it's different things like that. When you hold a position of authority, especially law enforcement, you have a protection because you're government. You're government, so you have to be protected. And then it's just gotten so extreme now where we just have to figure out a different way where we cannot have brazing open killings, people
right.
running and getting shot at, and then we're figuring out a way to justify it. Because shootings are very simple. We've complicated mm-hmm. and we've sensationalized them. You cannot shoot an unarmed person. I mean,
yeah.
an unarmed is unarmed, no matter what kind of spin you put on it. You can't say, I made a mistake. Oh, I saw it. No, if you made a mistake, I think the American people would appreciate law enforcement saying, I made a mistake, because we're human too. If,
yes.
if an officer worked for me, and they're going to make mistakes. Things are going to go wrong, and in this line of work, it may involve firearms or different things like that. But I think mm-hmm. the cover up is what generates the anxiety
yes.
and the frustration with people. When we all witness with our own eyes a person being shot in the back while they're running, and then we have
yep.
this whole trial and figuring out lawyers making all kinds of money defending people, getting famous. At the expense of the people. We just got to figure out a different way to help. I think, you know, we can talk about maybe some law enforcement insurance or something like that, which there is insurance. But I think
yeah.
legislatively, we have to figure out a way where we're not having law enforcement making mistakes and then the community feeling like it's a cover-up, which is generating the distrust in law enforcement.
Exactly. Well, and in the courts.
When it's designed to step. In the court,
you know,
yeah.
mm-hmm. I have a graphic I did here a few years ago regarding guardianship, conservatorship, about the fact that you are never in more danger than when you step into a courtroom in this country. You are never in more
yeah.
danger, because too many times it's already these ex parte meetings. The lawyers
yep.
have colluded with each other, and with the judges wired, and it's all a done deal before you ever walk in there. And you know I'm telling the truth. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you choke up there, but the judicial system, and when I look across the board, it starts with law enforcement. It moves up through the judicial system, or what passes for that now. And then we get to the Bar Association, which there is a massive movement. This is a union. It is the most powerful, lucrative union in the country, and it is writing the laws to benefit them and
right.
to profit them. And until we get
right.
rid of this bunch, we can't get control of that judiciary. And if we can't control the judiciary, we can't control law enforcement. And when I say control law enforcement, what I mean is going back to peace officers instead of law
right.
enforcement. And there is a difference. The man who showed up out here 19 years ago was a peace officer. And
correct.
But he was prepared to be here should I need help. And
right.
I had great respect for that. The guy who rides around here now is law enforcement, and he's just hoping I cough, sneeze, or trip so he can run up and, you know, you know what I'm saying? They've written everything to such an extent. This immunity thing they talk about. Now, I'm a strict constitutionalist, and no one, and I even have Supreme Court rulings on this, no one in any capacity has immunity from anything, from the law. And if you are supposed to be law enforcement, wouldn't your first priority be to uphold the law?
Exactly.
And,
that's
you
right.
know, you can't be worse than the criminal that I might be faced off with and then expect me not to be terrified of you and to be combative if you confront me. Instinctively,
right.
I'm going to want to fight. You know, I'm going to want
right.
to defend myself. The same as I would if somebody walked up, you know, and tried to rob me. That you wouldn't want to do that because, first off, I ain't got anything. But secondly, I'm one of those people that is, should you confront me like that, I'm going to fight. I'm not a flight person.
Right.
I wish I was, Dave, because I'm getting old.
Right.
And I never could run, so there ain't no sense in me trying to do that. And but it just, am I making sense to you? We need to be able to
Absolutely.
Talk to these people. We need
yes.
people like you out there that are working in the schools so that these kids are not afraid of the police.
That's
They're
right.
not afraid of the sheriff. They know who these
That's
people
right.
are. There
right.
needs to be this interaction with these kids. And you
yes.
create this mindset. And the one they're creating now is fear. And that's
exactly.
not going to work out well for anybody.
You would really love. We did a parade on Labor Day Monday. It's the largest parade in the state of Maryland, the Greenbelt Festival Parade. And you would have loved the coloring books we gave to the kids. It's called The Sheriff Is Your Friend. And it gives it's a coloring book, and it tells them a little bit about the sheriff and asks the trivial questions and shows them the right answers. It was the neatest thing. The kids loved it. We must have passed out thousands of them, because the average adult has no idea what the sheriff is supposed to be doing, or what the sheriff
right.
is, or what the difference between the police and the sheriff.
Sure.
So
mm-hmm.
if we can start a big part of what I'm going to do, my campaign is about education, because education, my grandmother was an educator, a career educator, so my passion has always been educating people. And if
mm-hmm.
we start people young, if we start educating kids young, we won't have another generation of people who are too proud to admit that we never learned some of the basic things we should have learned in school.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And school is key. One of the things I objected to, although my granddaughters went to a very, very good school, but was in the civics class. And
mm-hmm.
The one granddaughter came home the one day, and she said, because I'm always harping about the Constitution, read the Bill of Rights, let's look up this one and see what it says and what all is attached to it and what does that mean. Mm-hmm. And she said, we talked about the Constitution in civics class today for a whole hour. I said, oh, a whole hour, huh? And she said, yeah. Mm-hmm. And she said, and then the teacher said, it is our founding document, but it's old and antiquated, and it's no longer relevant. You don't tell me things like that. So I just
right.
went right over to the school and had the principal call the teacher down, and I informed this woman that if she ever told my granddaughter anything like that again, I would personally remove her tongue from her mouth. And I said, the next time you want to say something like that, you remove my granddaughter from the room. And
exactly.
she just stood and looked at me, and I talked to the principal, wonderful man. I said, these kids need to learn about the Constitution, but the other thing they need to learn is basic law. Instead of mythology
right.
classes, let's teach a law
right.
a class on basic law. What are your rights? What is the
That's
Bill
right.
of Rights? What does it mean to you? And
That's right.
arm yourself with knowledge. And he said, they won't let us teach it. I said, what?
Wow. That's a
he
crazy.
Said they,
That's a legislation
this,
thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. This comes in, No Child Left Behind started it, and it culminates with this Common Core crap where they come out of school dumber than when they went in. And but, well, you know it's true, David. You know it's true. We are educating for stupidity. And they
we are.
You know. And then, so in the middle of all this, like I say, then we're having these mock drills where we lock down the school, which just terrified the hell out of these kids and
mm-hmm.
made them even more afraid. And
right.
I would like to see, and when you are elected, and I'm holding on that, when you are elected, I want to keep track of what you do in your community to change
yes.
this mindset, aside from what you've already done, to
yes.
where law enforcement becomes part of the community again instead of the antagonist and the
instead
one you need to be afraid
of. Terrorizing it. Instead
yes.
of terrorizing the community. Because one of the things, too, I'm going to do and make sure, I noticed in federal law enforcement positions are very lucrative positions. They're very difficult to get. What ends up happening, areas like D.C., a lot of people don't want to come here unless they're from here. So what
uh-huh.
ends up happening is people from all over the country will take a job temporarily to come to D.C. And they'll spend some time, but they will spend most of their time working to try to get home. have no interest in the community at all. So they don't mind coming in, terrorizing our community to write their promotional packages to somehow get home and then and go home and do community policing. So my point on that is that we have to make sure that the people that are evaluated and hired, the people that are from the community, get some kind of preferential points or some kind of preferential that's not certain treatment, but points. There has to be there has to be excess points for people that are local, and make sure that we hire local people and give them an opportunity as opposed to outsiders who are just looking for a job so they can go back home.
Exactly. I was just out there in D.C. I have to tell you, I couldn't wait to get out of there. The first thing, I'm not kidding. I had never been there before, and I wanted so bad to see the White House and, you know, the Hart Senate building and all of this. I wanted so bad to see these things because I never had. And I thought, you know, so for me, this was just the trip of a lifetime. And I was sorely disappointed. The number of homeless people that were sleeping on the sidewalks, that were sleeping on benches, just within a block of the White House. This is disgraceful. Yeah. This is disgraceful.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, I will say something did improve, David. Usually when I go through the airport, the last time I flew was 7 years ago when I went and got my granddaughters, and I have a lot of metal in my body. I am the bionic woman, and I just can't do that thing. But anyway, I'd go through that. I wouldn't go through the naked body scanner, so they would make me go through the other one. And I don't even want to look at this naked. You ain't looking at it either. Anyway, I would light that thing up like a Christmas tree. And the last time I flew, I'm coming out of Hartsfield in Atlanta, and they grabbed me and slammed me into this glass cage, separated me from my granddaughters, and then they stand me spread eagle, stripped down as much as they can, and they're going all over me. And this agent said to me, I'm going to be touching every area of your body. I said, no, you're not. And she says, and if I don't get any resistance, we won't have any problems. And she's coming up the inside of my thigh. And I said, excuse me, I've never had a man try that hard to get up there, and you ain't going there either. And she just kind of, and well, anyway, I finally got out of there. But when I flew out this time, they got a different thing. I stood in it with my arms up in the air. I didn't have to take any of my clothes off. It went, whoom. I come out, I can see a screen. It shows all the metal in my body, and they did a quick pat down of my knee and my back and stuff, and then said, have a good trip. And I was shocked. I thought, they're going to kill me on the concourse. I know, they're setting me up. You know, but that has improved, and, you know, so I'm glad for that.
That's a leadership issue. The leadership must have changed at the top. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The leadership
because
at the top.
And the people were personable and nice. But this is what I'm saying. Before, it was I had swore I would never fly again. After that trip, I would never fly again because of how invasive this was. But now we got these roadside cavity searches. Let's give that a try with me, see how that works out. Let's just – somebody's going to go to hell that day, and I ain't sure it's going to be me. And this is what I'm saying. This has to stop. Geez, we got 90 seconds left. That just sucks. Listen, I want to have you back on again because we need to talk some more. And but I want to remind everybody, Whistleblowers is brought to you in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place annually every July in Washington, D.C. And we will be back again next week, and I'm not sure who with just yet because I ain't done talking to people. But anyway, and we will have David back on, and we're going to be following his campaign and staying up with this. And please, people out there in Prince George's County, and I know there's a bunch of you listening, I can tell by the call board, vote for this man. Vote for this man. Vote for this man. Do yourself a favor and vote this man into office. You'll be glad that you did. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. David, we will be talking again soon. I promise you we will. And everybody, have a good evening. Good night.
Thank you so much for having me. Good night.
You bet.